14. The next item on the agenda is approval of the minutes from a February 1st, 2021 meeting. Do I have a motion?
Move for approval.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Motion carries unanimously. The next item on the agenda is public comments. If you are here to speak to any of the items on the agenda, please come forward, state your name and address for the record, and you have 2 minutes. Is there anyone here to speak for public comment?
Thank you. Good afternoon. My name is Ben Trawick. I reside at 268 Quint Street, and I'm here individually and also as a member of the president of the Bayview Acres Civic Club. Here to comment on the rezoning case R3720, which is the Queens Court rezoning application, and I have a few points to make. The first one is that I understand there's a motion or a request for yet another deferral of this item. There are no grounds for a deferral. We informed the developers on January 22nd that the BVACC had voted to oppose this application and to terminate further negotiations. We talked to these guys for 3 years. Nothing was presented that was satisfactory. There's nothing left to discuss. Second, the Planning Commission wisely recommended denial of this application. This project promises an unwanted increase in density, congestion, and height in an area which is already under immense development pressure over there in Bayview. Third, the approval, if given, would harm the character of Bayview. It would dramatically increase density, dramatically increase the height of buildings, all out of character with the well-established situation in Bayview. It would exacerbate an existing parking deficiency. It would exacerbate existing congestion issues, which endanger children in particular along Hawthorne Drive, put at risk by speeding drivers who cut through the neighborhood to try to circumvent the always piling up traffic along Coleman Boulevard. Against these considerations, the only thing on the other side of the ledger is the developer's profit. And I personally, and on behalf of the Bayview Acre Civic Club, ask this committee and the council please not to prioritize one developer's profit over our community's quality of life, safety, and well-being. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there anyone else here for public comment?
Hello, Brett Woodward, representing the ownership of Queens Court. And I would like to address some of Mr. Trawick's comments. First, we've owned the property for 2 years, so we haven't been in negotiations for 3 years. However, we have had a lot of meetings to discuss this project with this neighborhood, with the Bayview Civic Club. And what we had been asked to do is to come up with a list of deed restrictions that we would place on the property to address their concerns, which we have given to them, which would be a limit on the density, which would cap that at no more than 31 units. And our current site plan that they've seen is at 28 units. There are 22 units that are in Queens Court today. Secondly, we cap the height to, I think what we'd agreed to was 45 feet, and we have said we would also cap that at 40 feet, which is at the same height of some of the homes that are in Bayview. Secondly, we would restrict against short-term rentals in a deed restriction. We would also require 2.7 parks per unit for these townhomes, which is what we propose, which is above and beyond what the code calls for townhouses, and also make a contribution to the Civic Club Park for improvements. And what got us going on the second round after Planning Commission is we had a lot of people reach out to us after that meeting to say, wow, I wish this could have gotten put through, you know, and of course encourage those folks to write and call in and so on and so forth. And so we tried to re-engage the Bayview Civic Club to discuss this. The Civic Club has said we don't want to discuss it anymore, and but then some of the neighbors have continued to reach out to us to try to move this forward. So our hope was to get another deferral so that we could have another opportunity to work with the Civic Club and work with other residents, because it became known to us that the Bayview Civic Club is a voluntary organization, and not all homeowners are a member of that organization. So that's what our request for more time is, so that we could make sure we have reached out to everyone and gotten their feedback, and feel like we've addressed everything that they had, you know, requested from us.
Thank you.
So, thank you.
Is there anyone else here for public comment?
Hi, I'm Laurie Bixler, 144 3rd Avenue, and I'm here to just quickly discuss short-term rentals as usual. Hi, everybody. So anyway, I was at the Planning Commission, and you probably have all the comments in the letter that I sent out regarding that. I know that enforcement is an issue for Mount Pleasant, and I want to reiterate that all of us responsible property short-term rental owners are fully supportive of better enforcement of the regulations, and we are here to assist. But unfortunately, that did kind of open a can of worms, because the ordinance is not that old. You know, it's 2 years old, and it does scare all of us that every time council changes and things change, that we are at risk. So I want to ask that you consider putting in a clause for grandfathering in, just to make sure that 2 years from now, when we have a whole new set of council members, that we're protected. I ran out of the house really quickly, so I apologize. I meant to print these for everybody. This is not a suggestion, but while I was on the internet this week, somebody sent me a town ordinance that really was kind of eye-opening, and I thought it was really clean. I'm not criticizing what we do. I think Michelle is wonderful. But I came across this, and I just wanted to share it. I only have two copies. Who should I give them to? I just thought that was really...
I think you can hand them to the clerk, and then she'll...
Okay. I just thought it was something that y'all should see. It had some really neat breakdowns and explanations. Otherwise, just keep up the good work, and let's just get this solved so that we can all stay legal and good neighbors and good citizens.
Thank you. Is there anyone else for public comment? Yes, we have another.
Thanks.
Hello, my name is Drew Burris. I also represent the Queens Court ownership. Just my partner addressed most of the questions, but I did want to add that we've tried to accommodate everything that the neighbors have asked for, and we have actually gone and met with Councilman Chapman and the Mayor Haney and various members of Planning Department and planning staff, and what they have asked us to do is to re-engage the neighborhood, re-engage the Civic Club. And so that's what we've done. We've reached out, and we're asking for a little bit more time to continue those negotiations with the members of the community. Thank you.
Ms. Whitley, yes. If I can get his name.
Oh, sorry, sir. Could you say your name for the record?
I thought I did. I'm sorry. It's Drew Burris.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
Good afternoon. I'm Fred Smalls. I live at 2959 Elijah Smalls Road. This is in the Phillips community. We are here to voice our concerns about the proposed development and annexation of 9 acres of property in our community. We have recently faced the very same issues before with the development of the Phillips Creekside community. The special PD that is being considered or may have even been approved possesses a problem. It gives the developer, the town of Mount Pleasant, leeway to change the utilization of the property, and they could also change the zoning to something not compatible with the zoning already in the Phillips community. The lot sizes could possibly be increased. They would not have to adhere to that 2,500 square feet requirement. This would allow them to build more homes than what was originally requested. With these developments, the infrastructure is usually considered on the backside of all of the development, which creates a problem in our communities. The runoff from these developments, the transportation issues where the traffic is being dumped into our community and out on Highway 41. All these issues are not usually addressed until it poses a problem within the community. So we're asking you all to look at those issues before you approve this development or the annexation.
Thank you.
Good evening. My name is Richard Havisham, and I reside at 2938 Bennett Charles Road in the Phillips community. I'm speaking on the same property, that 9-acre tract that is being proposed to be annexed into the town. First of all, this property, they got it stated as a Covington, Covington development, but it's not. This is in the Phillips community. That property borders the property of Bobo Road, Joe Rouse Road, and Alonzo Rouse Road, dead in the heart of in the Phillips community. Not on the outskirts, not in Covington, but in Phillips community. Now, what this thing is going to do is when Phillip is already is a community of interest from the State Historical Society. We applied for the Charleston County New Zoning for Historical Settlement Communities. And we also is going, trying to get on the historical register. With changing that one, two parcel of property, it changes the character of the community, and then it changes what we can go as a historical area. The lot size, the small sort of misspoke, is 12,500 square feet lots. And that's a thing that we was very adamant with the county to have the lot size so it'd be compatible with the rest of the lot size. We had other developers wanted to come in and put 6,000, 7,000 square foot lot. That is not compatible with the Phillips community. And one of the things that for the Historical Society is looking at, they're looking at our land pattern. You know, how it's laid out, this lot size, and the residence in the area. You annex it into Covington, that totally throws out everything that where the county already got in store for us. All right, thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah.
All right, is there anyone else for public comment?
Good afternoon. George Freeman, 1450 Bowman Road, Director of Community Activity for CAGE. As I sit here and listen, and I think about a lot of the other communities in the settlement communities and the town of Mount Pleasant, we all talk about the quality of life. And it appears to be two visions of quality of life here in the town of Mount Pleasant. There's the old quality of life for the communities that have existed for more than 100 years around here, and we have the quality of life of the neighbors that are moving here now. It appears that the people who are moving here now like the idea of being close to each other where you can reach your arms out and touch the house next door. In the settlement community, our community has always been like open space. Everybody talks about open space now, but they don't seem to recognize that in the settlement communities, it is open space. Everything is far apart. And that's why when we had an opportunity to work with the town of Mount Pleasant and the county to get them to agree on a system that would protect that quality of life, and everybody agreed that the minimum lot size would be 12,500 square feet. But since that time, developers have taken advantage of this one mistake that's in there where you talk about density. When we talked about the density for the settlement communities, we were talking about the actual physical 3 houses per acre. If you do the math with the 12,500, you'll find out that the most you can put on a physical acre lot is 3 houses. And that's where the 3 houses per acre came about. It's not about grouping it all together, clustering it. It's about maintaining that open space. And that's the quality of life the community like Phillips is trying to maintain. So I believe it's 6B on your item here, or it's that I'm here speaking against. We would like you to not to approve that because that would disrupt the quality of life for the Phillips community. It's R621. Please do not approve that because it will disrupt the quality of life in the Phillips community. Thank you.
Thank you. All right, do we have any? Oh, we do.
Good afternoon. Cashin Drolet with Historic Charleston Foundation. I'm here to speak in opposition to items 5C and 6B as well, joining the representatives from the Phillips community. Historic Charleston Foundation opposes annexation and rezoning of this 9-acre tract. Tagging along to what Mr. Habersham was saying, this tract is located in a National Register Historic District eligible area. It is significant cultural site for Gullah traditions and historic value in that sense, but also, as Mr. Habersham was alluding to, for its settlement patterns, for those lot sizes, for the settlement pattern that we see in the 1875 tract, we see in the settlement patterns of the community today. We were out there Friday afternoon, hosted by these gentlemen, doing the documentation of the historic land pattern out there, in preparation for the nomination for the National Register Historic District nomination that we hope to complete later this spring. We believe that rezoning of this 9-acre tract into the Dunes West PD is inconsistent with the settlement pattern with and would result in density and use that is inconsistent with the current land use pattern in the Phillips community. We believe that the current county, should the town annex the site, we believe that the current county zoning is appropriate. That is something that was negotiated with the community members, and that something similar should be honored should the town annex. But again, we would oppose annexation and oppose rezoning into the PD, and also would note that the Mount Pleasant comprehensive plan calls for settlement community land use in this area.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Chairman Whitley and members of the committee. My name is Betsy LaForce. I'm a senior project manager with the Coastal Conservation League. We appreciate the opportunity to speak before you today, also on items 5C and 6B on the agenda, to oppose the request to annex and rezone two parcels along Bessemer Road and Mount Pleasant. This request was unanimously recommended for denial at the February 17th Planning Commission meeting, when many members of the surrounding community showed up to speak in opposition to the proposal, expressing concern around adverse impacts to the neighborhood safety and character. We urge this committee to uphold the desires of the community, the intention of the comprehensive plan, and the unanimous recommendation by the Planning Commission to deny both the annexation and rezoning requests that would be in direct contrast to the settlement community land use area. The two parcels in question, comprising approximately 9.05 acres, are currently zoned S3, Charleston County Special Management District, which limits density to 3 units per acre and requires 14,500 square foot lots, as we've heard. The existing Charleston County zoning is consistent with the traditional site plans that represent the cultural and historic significance of the Phillips community that the town's comprehensive plan calls to protect. The Dunes West Park West type of suburban style development is simply not appropriate for this area, which is why the Conservation League is requesting this committee to deny the annexation request. Should the committee decide to vote out of alignment with the community and the comprehensive plan and move forward with granting the annexation, then we urge the town to zone the parcels in a way that's consistent with the current Charleston County S3 designation, which limits density and matches the lot sizes that are typical of settlement community land uses and the surrounding Phillips community character. We stand with the Phillips community and our partners at the Historic Charleston Foundation and the Preservation Society in opposing this request. Our preservation partners remind us that this request not only is contrary to the guidance of the comprehensive plan, but it also threatens the eligibility of a National Register Historic District, significant for its connection to traditions and values of the Gullah culture.
Thank you.
Thank you for your consideration of this comment.
Thank you. Do we have any other members of the public who wish to speak? Going once, going twice, and public comment is closed. Item number 4 is old business, 4A.
Good afternoon, committee members. You have received a request to defer this item to April. It was first heard by the commission in December, and so since January, it has been deferred. Based on the timeline, just going by the timeline, they could get another deferral and still be within their six-month period, but that is the request before you at this time.
All right, members of the committee?
I move for deferral, and I'll tell you why in a second, if I get a second.
All right, is there a second for the deferral?
Second.
We have a motion to defer and a second. Mr. Chapman?
And I know this has been on our agenda a few times, but this area of Mount Pleasant, where these 21 units are, is in terrible condition. It needs to be fixed somehow. Whether or not it's 30 units or whatever, I don't know. But I think we need to give the developer a chance to come up with a way to fix this area so that it's is no longer an eyesore for the community in that area, as well as the neighbors behind them. It's not in the best of condition. The original plan, and I hope an eventual plan, really makes improvements to Coleman Boulevard, which are also needed. So that's why I'm requesting to continue deferral as allowed, to give the opportunity to come up with a good plan, which we can all be proud of.
Thank you. Ms. Hyatt or Ms. Corley, do you have anything to add?
I agree.
You agree? Okay. And I think, I was interested to hear from the developer that, you know, Bayview Acres, the Civic Association, doesn't represent all the homes in the community, and that you would like the opportunity to reach out to people who are perhaps not part of that. So I'm also in favor of this deferral. If there's no further discussion, all those in favor?
Aye.
Carries unanimously. Item number 5A, annexations.
Okay, this first request before you is to annex two properties totaling about 4.92 acres at the end of Old Rosebud Trail, and it's adjacent to Chandler Road. And let me give you an aerial there so you can see it's the two properties starred at the end of Old Rosebud Trail. This is our comprehensive plan, and it does recommend rural residential land uses for this area. This development is actually, these two parcels are actually, and you can see it better in the zoning map, they appear to be, and they are part of the Pepper Tract, the Tupelo Row neighborhood. And originally, the developer had submitted a request to go to Planning Commission in February to bring these two parcels into the Pepper Tract PD. He's done that periodically over the years, and you can still see some hatched parcels within the PD when this PD was originally done in the county. Not all the parcels have come in yet. So his plan was to bring these two parcels into the plan development and zone them low density single family. Right before the Planning Commission meeting occurred, he asked to withdraw the zoning request to bring them into the PD, and wanted to move forward with the annexation with the understanding that they would come in as R1 single family residential. And so that's a request before you now. There is a plat. This was subdivided. This was one lot, and it was subdivided in the county, and it does have an easement that's been recorded for access to that other lot. And so, just so you know, it's a subdivision that recently occurred in the county. It met all the county standards, and now they wish to come into the town and be zoned R1. And I'm happy to answer any questions you may have.
Committee, do we have any questions on this annexation?
No, ma'am. I move for approval. My only problem was I couldn't get in to see it because the gates wouldn't let me in. Mm-hmm. Is there any way in the future, when we've got stuff on our agenda, that we can get access to see the property? I had trouble with this and also the next item on the agenda. How do we figure that out? Mm-hmm. And I know I haven't gotten a second, so.
Yeah, is there a second?
Second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Ms. Reed, do you have any thoughts on how we can get past the gates?
Great question. I'll have to look into that. But I'll find out for you. I'm sure there's a way if they want to annex into the town, I'm sure they would be willing to open their gates to let you come see.
I would think so. And I think it's contiguous to property, and it's coming in as single family, contiguous to the town already, so. But we're going to have to get access for our police and fire, that's for sure, as well as public service.
All right, do we have any further discussion? All right, all those in favor?
Aye.
All right, motion passes. Item number B, Tobacco Road.
Yes, this is a request to annex one property, about 0.93 acres off of Tobacco Road in the Bulls Bay subdivision. And there's an aerial of the property. Again, this property is recommended according to our comprehensive plan for rural residential land uses. They will come in as R1. And here's the zoning map. So you can see most of the properties historically came in as rural residential. The only difference, there's already a single family home there. So really the only difference is the lot size. Everything else is the same as rural residential in R1. But there is an existing single family residence, and that's all it could be used as.
We have a motion to approve. Do we have a second?
Second.
All right, any further discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All right. Carrie?
Oh, yes. It's on. I think I was just, can you hear me now?
All right, item number 5C.
And there is a request to defer both the annexation and the zoning request that was submitted to you on Friday.
All right, we have a request for deferral. Would anyone like to make a motion or to approve that deferral or deny it?
I move for deferral.
We have a motion to defer. Do we have a second?
Second.
We have a second. Is there any discussion? This motion would defer. Is it all right for us to defer both 5C and 6B at the same time? Mr. DeMore? Yes, it is? Okay, all right. This would defer.
Yeah, sorry, is that the motion?
The motion is to defer 5C and 6B on the agenda. And if there's no further discussion, all those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All right. Defer is approved. Moving on to item number 6 on the agenda. 6A.
Short-term rentals. So this is a text amendment before you to amend our short-term rental ordinance. Just a quick update. Committee received an update on the program at their September meeting, 2020. At the October and November Planning and PJL Committee meetings, staff presented issues and concerns and received committee recommendations at that time, which included primarily to lower the maximum allowed number from 1% to a set number of 350. Also, there was a recommendation to revise the enforcement provisions. Both the committee had concerns and staff did as well. We wanted to deal with those operating an STR without a permit, so outside of the system. Those operating within the system with a permit. And then our legal counsel had talked with some of our judges, and we wanted to make sure that we were consistent with how we were notifying for violations and to make the overall program more efficient. Staff presented these drafts to the Planning Commission for their public hearing on February 17th, last month. And at that time, Planning Commission did recommend denial of the text amendments. They had concerns about the set number 350. I'll talk a little bit more about that in a minute. And they also felt like they wanted, on one hand, they wanted more time to deal with it. And on the other hand, they felt like this was a fairly new ordinance. So they were feeling a little burned out on short-term rentals, but they did recommend denial of the amendments. So I just want to kind of update you on the numbers, and we've done this recently, but it's changed. So at the time we drafted the ordinance, we had issued about 360 permits. At the time I put this together, we had issued 385. We've probably issued more since then, but that's the most recent update I have. So approximately 270 of those, nearly 70%, are for whole house rentals where the property owner does not live on site. Total number of complaints to date, 35. So you figure we've been in effect for over a year now. We've had 35 complaints. 15 of those were the same two addresses. That has been resolved. The remaining 20 were for not having a permit or not being allowed in the neighborhood. All of those have been addressed. The last complaint we received was September of last year. Total illegal rentals that still need to become compliant, there are about 13, and Jane continues to work with them, and they are on our radar. And so what I wanted to do next was just pull up the PDF of the text amendment and go through that with you and talk through some of our primary changes and then get committee input. So one of the issues had come up fairly frequently was, is this a business or is it a residential use? Because we have to get a business license.
It's not showing up there.
Oh, I'm sorry. Hold on. I may have, yeah, that happened again. I think I have to close out of my PowerPoint for you to see the ordinance. There we go. Okay, thanks, Liz. So one of the issues was, is this a, because we have to get a business license, is this a commercial use? And it's not. It's still, regardless of the fact that you have to get a business license, it still is a short-term rental of a residence where somebody is coming and using it for residential use. They're sleeping there, they're eating there, and then they're leaving and doing their daily activities. And so we wanted to clarify that. It is a residential dwelling unit, and we took the definition from our current ordinances and put that in there just to make it crystal clear that this is what it is. The second part is we did a, we put the cap in. So you can see that before it was 1% of the total number of dwelling units. When we wrote this in, like I said, we had only issued 360. We are now at 385. I know we have more in the queue, but we did write in, and it was the desire of committee at that time that we put in a hard and fast number of 350. And so this ordinance section reflects that. This was really kind of an attempt to do two things. One, we wanted to get in line with the new business license timelines and deadlines, and we also wanted to put in a penalty fee for a late fee. And so what this section does is basically say, if you are an STR operator, and we've given you this grace period already, but if you come in right after that grace period, there is a, you have to pay a fee if you want to renew your application. And then last, if you want to apply for an STR application and you have been operating illegally, you have to pay a fine, a $500 penalty fee. And so that's, and just so you know, these any new fees would have to receive a public hearing by town council. And so that is something, if committee recommends approval of this, that we would have to move forward with. This next section was kind of a staff wanting to clean this up. You'd be surprised at what we get calls about and how many scenarios there are. And this really came about when we had one property in, and I can't even think of what street it is, but it's basically, it's two single family residential structures that it appears that the owner came in, separated three or four bedrooms in each one and is renting them out as separate units. And so what they'll say is, I'm living on site in this house, but if I can rent out my bedroom, I'm gonna jump over here to this house and rent out three bedrooms and live over here. And I may just couch surf while I rent out my bedroom. It was just a mess. And we know that there's gonna be loopholes and there's gonna be ways to get around it, but we wanted to kind of make it more clear of what is allowed here. And so we broke it down into really three scenarios. One is, if you're an STR operator, you can rent your residential dwelling. So if you have a single family residential house, you can rent it out to one guest, one entity, one contract, and not live on site. Number two, if you think in the terms of a traditional bed and breakfast, where I live on site and I have up to six bedrooms and I rent them out, separately, but I live on site, and I think we have one or two of those actually, and that's it. But in terms of the more traditional bed and breakfast, you have to live on site. And then the third is where you have your accessory dwelling unit. And this is in our ADU ordinance actually, separate from STRs. If you own a piece of property with an accessory dwelling unit, you're required to either live in the principal structure or the ADU. One of those must be owner-occupied. And so this is just reiterating that if you have your house and you have an ADU, you can live in one or the other and rent out the one you're not living in, but it must be as one single contract to one guest or entity. And so these we wanted to sort of make more clear as we moved forward when we get these questions of what is allowed and what's not. We put in there some things about covenants and restrictions. We wanted to place the onus on the applicant to provide those to us so that we don't have to go searching. Sometimes they're very old, difficult to find. And so we put some of that in there. Let's see. Next, we talk about the enforcement and penalty, and our legal counsel spent quite a bit of time on this. And if you'll recall, the last time we talked, some of the things that were thrown out were we could put a lien on the property, or we could put a stop operating order on the property. And I think after meeting internally and after legal review, we thought, you know, what we really need to do is be consistent with how we do our enforcement if you don't have a permit. So if you don't have a permit, then you're violating our zoning code like any other violation, and we would handle that as any other violation. If you do have a short-term rental permit, then we want to deal with that. First of all, we have those late fees. We have that penalty fee if you're operating illegally when you come in and then you want to become legal. And then we have two warnings. After the third warning comes with a penalty, another penalty of $500, and then after that, we revoke your business license and we revoke your permit. At that point, you can't apply to get another permit for a year, and I think that's everything we have in here. We still have our nonconformities, and I know that we just had first reading on a change of that. So all we have done, I know a lot of folks ask about this section, am I grandfathered in, am I legally nonconforming? All we do is reference our chapter 156-140, because we already address nonconformities with everything else throughout the town, not just STRs. And so instead of reinventing the wheel and coming up with things that we're going to list in here, we just want to reference our nonconformities ordinance. So any updates to that ordinance will apply here as they would any other nonconforming issue in our town. So that's all I have. I'm happy to answer any questions that you may have.
I guess I have a question. If someone were to have their business license and permit revoked due to violations and they apply again the following year, would they go to the back of the line? Would they, you know what I mean? They would go to the back of the line. Okay.
Yes, they would. Yeah.
Okay. Does anyone else have questions? Ms. Corley?
So you feel like they're 350, it's still a good number?
Obviously, we can do whatever the committee and council decides. I think from staff's perspective, we do have concerns if we have the set number. So once, by the time this ordinance passes, we'll probably have about 400. Those, we're already at 385, 390. So once we get there, those additional 50, whatever they are, 45 or 50, those will now be legally established nonconforming. So they will fall under this nonconformity section. I think from staff's concern is just by setting that 350 hard number, is that going to encourage folks to then just operate illegally, and then we don't get that application fee, and they're not in our radar, and they're not in our system. I think it's better to know what we're dealing with than to not know what we're dealing with. That would be our primary concern, but that is, you know, certainly a
Do you feel like that increase in numbers is just people trying now coming in to be compliant, or do you think that more residents are needing to rent out their homes? I'm just curious. I wonder.
I think we're getting a lot of people buying homes
for that purpose.
Mm-hmm. I think Jane gets a lot of calls about that. Mm-hmm. I think some of it's that. I think some of it is folks just coming into compliance. They have had a year. Your grace period's over. Now it's time to get your permit if you want to get it, because guess what? They're almost gone.
Yeah.
And so I think it's a little bit of both.
I always worry that people need to because of economic changes, and it just makes me, but That makes sense.
Ms. Hyatt?
One thing to consider with that is if we feel, if they're living on site, that that's a better arrangement, that maybe going forward, it would help with bills if they live there. Maybe we could allow more of that, and it would discourage people from just buying them, mm-hmm. just to turn this into Hotel Mount Pleasant. Mm-hmm. That's something we haven't really discussed. Like if if the cap applies to non-resident short-term rentals, and then maybe the 1% could expand if you live on site and just rent a room. I don't know. That's just something that we haven't really talked about.
No.
If we only put a cap on the ones that don't live there, and then, but not go over the 1%, but maybe let the 1% just grow with, if you live on site. That's a consideration.
An interesting idea, Ms. Hyatt. Mr. Chapman?
I like the absolute number. I think by having an absolute number total, it's much easier to enforce by staff. One area that I wasn't sure we were doing is that an ADU can be used as an STR mm-hmm. on a property where people are living. I thought ADUs were for grandmothers and all. That was the initial intent, I think, mm-hmm. when ADUs were initially allowed by the zoning ordinance. So I'm a little disturbed that ADUs are now being included in this. Also, what was the rationale from the Planning Commission, again, voting this down?
Well, to address your first comment, ADUs, I believe the intent probably was back in 2010 when that ordinance was adopted, was to allow, you know, your aging parents to live with you, those sorts of things. But there was never any requirement that it be used for that. What there was is the requirement that the property, one or the other, be property owner occupied. So I think that was sort of the sort of stick that made people perhaps use it for that, but there's nothing to prohibit them. And since this ADU, since the short-term rental ordinance was adopted, that it has been allowed in as an ADU. So what we said was, if it's a dwelling unit or a portion thereof, and because an accessory dwelling unit is a permitted dwelling unit, it falls under that category. To answer your second question, the Planning Commission, they were just a little frustrated, I think, with the fact that it just got adopted, and they felt like they had spent 2 years looking at it, and then they also expressed concern with the 350 cap. They thought it was a little bit arbitrary. They weren't sure what it was based on. And I think you got some written comments as a side, but that was kind of what was mm-hmm. expressed at the meeting, and so they just said, just leave it alone, keep it the way it is. So,
I have a question for Mr. Pagliarini. Mm-hmm. Are we allowed to distinguish between whole house rentals and and where there is on site person? Because it did seem clear that there were no complaints from any of them where the owners were on site.
Right.
Yes, ma'am. Legal has looked into this issue, and we believe it is appropriate. I think what you're asking is it an equal protection issue under the Constitution, and we believe it would be acceptable to make this distinction.
I think Ms. Hyatt's idea is a very good one because it addresses Ms. Corley's concern about resident, you know, that people have fallen on hard times, and if they need to rent out a room in their house to make ends meet, I think that's a very distinguishable situation than from people sort of treating it as investment properties and buying up houses and short-term renting and taking away from the long-term housing market, which is just creating an even tighter, crazier market in Mount Pleasant for our residents. You know, we are adjacent to one of the biggest tourist destinations in the world, and it's creeping across the bridge and into our neighborhoods, especially as Charleston has implemented their own STR rules. So with Ms. Hyatt's, If you agree, I think maybe asking staff to consider, you know, maybe returning to the returning some form where we have that 1% limit, but making a section that is specifically for if you're on site, like having that limit apply there. I don't know how we would best approach that. Ms. Hyatt?
I mean, maybe just have the cap apply, I don't know, to non-resident, but then that would increase those numbers because then the resident occupied would probably push up into the 1% numbers, you know what I'm saying? If we only allow more if they live on site above the cap with the,
or not above
but
the
only
cap,
at 1%,
up to, the cap,
up
yeah.
to 1%.
Because we currently have, you said about 270 that are on site, is that what those?
Yeah, about 70% of our permitted operators, no, they do not live on site.
Okay.
The majority of short-term rental operators are whole house rental. They do not live on site and they rent out their whole house.
So is there a way to return to the 1% limit, but say we are capping our, what's 70, you know, we are capping our whole house rentals at a certain number and then anything beyond that up to 1% must be on site. Is that something that we could look into?
Yeah, so I think, and this might be a question for David, with that sort of change, we might need to go back and have another public hearing. That's a pretty significant change. I'll let David weigh in on that. And just to make sure I understand, so you would want to keep it at 1% if you're if you live on site, but cap it at 350.
Well, no, because there's not three. But there's not 350 that are whole house rentals, right? So it's like 70% of that.
So you want to say you cap it at 275 or 270, what it is now. Is that what?
Yeah, like cap it at 250 or 275 for whole house rentals.
Whole house
and
rentals.
Then have an overall limit of 1% for,
and then
I don't,
keep
I mean,
the
I don't
1%.
Know. If that's something that would address that need. I mean, do we feel, I haven't heard from any community members that this is something that is impacting their ability to remain in their homes.
Like I said, we haven't, we don't get complaints very often. We haven't had a complaint since September. But when we do get a complaint, it's a whole house rental.
But I agree with Mr. Chapman that we need a cap of some kind because this 1% number is just going to keep growing over time, and then that is just going to increase the number of short-term rentals within the community. So how do people feel about I mean, we're already past the 350 number. Do people feel comfortable bumping that number up? I mean, if we stayed at 350, then that would just mean if people drop off, there just would be no renewals until we were back below the 350 number. So how does the committee feel
about
that?
Yeah, I like the fact that they drop off. And get down to a better number. I don't understand the 1%. Help me understand having a number and then 1% above that rather than capping at a particular number and that's it.
Ms. Hyatt, do you want to?
Just was trying to come up with an idea to solve the problem. The reason we did a cap to begin with is because so many were getting concentrated in one part of town.
Exactly.
And we didn't want any more
in
that part of town. But I just feel like you have fewer problems if it's owner-occupied. So if we, you know, kind of a compromise to go to the 1%, as long as it's owner-occupied. If we ever wanted to do more, if we wanted to ever go above our cap, then it should only be.
I'm not anxious to go above the cap.
Then it should only be owner occupied.
That's my.
And I think I was just concerned. I would never want to keep a family who is trying to make it from renting a room, even if it's temporarily. I just kind of have a problem with that, you know. But and I thought that was a perfect solution, was to lower the number of. Houses that are just being rented and bought for that purpose, but have more of a leeway for those properties that the owners are on site. Does that make sense? I think we're all talking about the same thing, right?
Yeah, and we could have it be just fixed numbers, right? Like you could have it be 275 whole house rentals and 125, you know, owner on site, and have the cap be
higher than
400, you know. And have that be the limitation.
I like the 350.
You like the 350? Okay.
I like the 350. And how you get to it, I'm not Really? I don't care.
And the current system, we already are past 350, so there would basically just be, and those would all be permitted to continue and until they dropped off, then they would drop off. And that's
correct.
And Mr. Chapman, that's what you're looking for?
That's what I'm looking for.
Okay.
Again, you know, if you want to have a lower number and allow a certain type to get up to the 350, I would be all right with that, I guess.
We're already past it, so I think that that ship has sailed for now anyway. So does the committee feel comfortable? I mean, I feel like what the Planning Commission sort of kicked it back to us to have further discussion on this, and I don't know that it makes sense to send it back to them because I think we're just going to get it ping-ponged back towards us. I think that staff has done a really great job at addressing the concerns raised by this committee and the concerns raised, and I think that I'm comfortable with us moving forward with what with what's been done, you know, despite it being against what Planning Commission voted, because it seemed like they really were just sort of pushing.
I'm fine with moving forward.
Okay, Ms. Hyatt?
I was just going to add, I think a lot of what their complaint, too, was about the way violations were determined. Wasn't that a big part of it?
I think so.
They thought, you know, if you disturb the peace 7 days straight, you're going to get a ticket every day. And the way we wrote it was one violation for the visit if they were there for a week. So I think that was one thing that they had discussed that they had an issue with when with their vote. I think there were details like that they weren't happy with. But anyway, I just want to make sure when you asked why they had a problem with it, I wanted to bring that up, that was one of their issues.
Okay. Do we have any... anyone want to make a motion regarding this?
Jam, you were saying we could just move forward with
350.
With 350 and what staff's done to the text amendment, and we could move forward to full council on Tuesday night. And allow for a fuller discussion. Because I think it would also be interesting to hear the perspective of the remaining five members of council, their feelings on the cap and their feelings on the, you know, whole house rental versus the owner on site rentals. Okay. Would anyone like to make the motion?
To
send it to full council?
Yes. I make a motion that we send this to full council.
We have a second? We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All right. Motion passes. Moving up to item 7, this was something that I asked to be placed on the agenda because, you know, now that we've got our comprehensive plan in place, you know, I was talking with Ms. Reed about prioritization, because we have this whole zoning code overhaul that is kind of in process and in progress, but there are certain things in the comprehensive plan that perhaps we should prioritize and move forward with, you know, or move ahead in this zoning code overhaul. So I thought that would be something that the committee could consider.
Thank you, Ms. Whitley. And I do have a little bit of updated information, and we have a couple of ideas, so we wanted to run all this by you. Just a quick update. Last year, Town Council did authorize a contract with White & Smith Planning Consultants. They looked at an audit of our development codes, and they looked at the needed changes. The results were presented to the commission and this committee. Based on that report, the town extended its contract to begin phase one of code rewrite, and then during that time, the new comprehensive plan was adopted in October of last year. So that phase one that was approved, it consists of these four, the top three tasks. And then those tasks are broken down. And when you get down to the comp plan code conflicts, the Boulevard Overlay District is kind of a subtask underneath that. And I'll talk a little bit about more in the minute. But what I wanted to point out was, our consultants are already working on number one and number two, and they've made some progress on that. And then what we are talking about today is number three, which was estimated to be completed by October 2021, and that's still, and it's certain tasks under that that was estimated to be completed. And so what we wanted to offer up to you was a couple of things for you to consider. So one of the concerns, and you've seen this perhaps today and every other committee meeting we have where we have these annexations come in, particularly in the settlement community. So when you have a change in the town boundaries, we have this section in the ordinance right now, change of town boundaries, and it talks about Territory that may be granted or annexed into the town shall be automatically classified in the R1 district unless the tract is shown on the comprehensive plan future land use map as rural conservation or community conservation. So this is still in the code, but what it references the language in our old comprehensive plan. And so what you have is, because this has not been updated, because those designations are not in our new comprehensive plan, everything is coming in as R1. What we have been working on and we're proposing to bring to the commission for public hearing in March, it's kind of a quick fix because we know that this overall code rewrite is going to happen, but we think the best thing we can do is fix this right now, and it's a fairly easy one. We're going back and forth and we're waiting for legal to weigh in, but we plan to bring it to you all at your April committee meeting. And what that would do is basically say, okay, we no longer have this community conservation future land use designation, but that's still our zoning designation that accomplishes the same goals and intent. So what we would do is just make some minor amendments here, and it would say, if the comprehensive plan recommends settlement community, then you will be zoned community conservation. Or it may look like if you are recommended for rural conservation, which is now called rural neighborhoods, then you'll be zoned rural conservation. So we're going to propose kind of a quick text amendment to fix these automatic annexations so that particularly when you're in the settlement community, you don't come in as R1, you'll come in as CC. So we think that's the best thing moving forward short term to fix that section. Our other concern is the new comprehensive plan and our current ordinance as it relates to our hubs, neighborhood hubs, community hubs, and redevelopment centers. And we're particularly talking about along the Boulevard Overlay District, and this is what Ms. Whitley was referring to, was these redevelopment pressures that we get calls, you know, hey, can I do this in this area? And right now, our zoning code says if you're in the Boulevard Overlay District, you can do up to 16 units an acre. If you do mixed-use development, you can do 20 units an acre. There are no senior or workforce housing requirements. This is how our current zoning ordinance is written. Now, clearly, that doesn't that is in direct conflict with the new comprehensive plan. Mm-hmm. So, as I mentioned before, our consultants are already starting to work on phase one. It's going to be perhaps a fix that they can have done for the Boulevard Overlay District come later this year. But what we are thinking, and we wanted to propose to you, was there's a couple ways we can handle this. One, we have some protective measures in place. We have our multifamily moratorium, and we have our building permit allocation system. So for the next 3 years, you can't get a multifamily, a building permit for a multifamily development, unless it is senior or workforce. But what we were thinking as sort of another quick fix while we continue on with this larger code rewrite and the consultants work on the overlay district is to perhaps amend that section in the overlay district that removes that 16 units an acre and removes that 20 units an acre, and it does reference our new comprehensive plan. We think that would be kind of a faster, easier way to do this while we continue to work on the bigger picture and the overlay. But I think if we had that in place along with our moratorium and our allocation system, I think that would be a good move moving forward. And then maybe we wouldn't have to rush so much with our Boulevard Overlay District, because the subtasks under that, it's what may come out of that is that we don't have an overlay. We have AB zoning that absorbs some of those really fantastic architectural things that are in the overlay, but does away with this. And so in an effort to not rush that, which we still think we can get done by the end of this year, we feel like if we can do a text amendment, address this, and then we're kind of covered while we continue to work and do the right thing with the overlay district. And we can continue, and we're starting to get some changes on that Shem Creek overlay plan as well. And so I wanted to kind of just run that by you. Ms. Whitley and I had discussed it. She asked I put it on and kind of give you our options. And again, these are the maps from the comp plan. So you can see that clearly we're getting some questions and some phone calls for some redevelopment opportunities, and the zoning code is not consistent with our new comp plan. And so I wanted to offer that up to you and get some direction.
Thank you so much for your work on this. I think these are great sort of short-term fixes while we wait for the longer overhaul. Does the committee have any thoughts on this?
I just think it has a good start, but I'd sure like to get moving on revising or somehow correcting the problems with the overlay district.
Ms. Hyatt?
I'm glad you brought these up. I think I brought up a discussion about the overlay like probably a year ago or more, and I wondered why we couldn't just get rid of it at the time. We had some, would have caused some non-conforming properties, and I was hoping that once we had addressed that there might be a way, as she mentioned, that we just not have these overlays at all. Is that a fast way to fix it? Ms. Corley?
Okay. That's a big, those are both massive situations.
Yeah, I knew that, but I knew.
Touch, and they are in some ways intertwined. Mm-hmm. But, for example, to remove an overlay in a particular area may bring back unintended consequences that isn't called for in the comp plan. Mm-hmm. I can think of removing an overlay, say, could then reintroduce allowing buildings to be in the back and all your parking to be in the front, right? Doesn't sound like something that council supports. So each one of those are lengthy, in-depth planning commissions required because it touches the zoning code. But we understand that there's the need to be expeditious in trying to catch up the zoning code with the comp plan, but it is not a two readings, 2 months type situation.
Yeah, I think that what Ms. Reed has suggested of these sort of like incremental steps is a really great step in the right direction. And, you know, I mean, I hate to say it, but the pace of government, October will be here, we'll blink and October will be here and we'll have that first phase from and have a more comprehensive zoning code overhaul that can really address and, like you said, incorporate all the things, the good things that we want to retain in the overlay districts, and but just remove the stuff that is clearly in conflict with our newly adopted comprehensive plan.
I think we need to protect the settlement communities because this keeps happening where things are zoned and then they're not really protected, and it probably keeps them from coming into the town. That if we had a way for them to protect the area and preserve it the way it is, they might be more inclined to annex. So I think that's two ways of helping the situation if we could solve that.
All right. Do we have any further discussion on this? Ms. Reed, do you have any other thoughts on this?
No, I just to follow up on what Mr. DeMora said, if you look at kind of the scope of services of what it's going to take to even research and review the Boulevard Overlay District, it's going to include surveys, public meetings, outreach. And so, you know, for brevity and for protection of the comp plan, and so we just felt like it may be the best option to do this kind of quick fix with these densities, because we've already addressed the height through the height map, and you took care of all that. And so we just feel like, so as not to rush the process and to do it right and to get it right, we felt like this would protect the intent of the comp plan and still give staff and consultants time to really review the overlay. And
right. Thank you. And I don't think we need any action from council on this. This is was an update.
Yeah, just an update, and just to kind of give you a heads up that we want to address it, and we're going to be bringing some staff text amendments in March.
Okay.
And so you'll be seeing them in April.
And Mr. Chapman, did you have something you wanted to say?
Yeah, I just had a question in how this issue, and I'm going to tell you what it is in just a second, is going to be addressed. when we were presented the comp plan and the individual hubs, the individual hubs were supposed to get a real good scrub in terms of looking at them and what we wanted in those particular hubs. And when you do that, that in itself would seem to negate, if you will, the overlay district as you started moving down the line. And so my question is, where and when does that complete investigation and plan for the individual hubs come about?
So is this the special area plans that you're referring to?
Say again?
Is this the special area plans that you're referring to?
That's another way to say it.
Yeah. Yeah. But I know that each of the hubs, there was supposed to be a special area plan for mm-hmm. each of the hubs, if I'm recalling correctly.
Exactly.
So is the timeline along with the timeline for the zoning code overhaul? Is that or the special area plan separate from that?
The special area plans would be separate, except for like the Shem Creek overlay and that small area plan. Some of it's in conjunction, some of it's going to come later. Most of these hubs and these redevelopment centers are in the corridor in the Boulevard Overlay District, so they're going to occur. What doesn't occur through the zoning code, we're going to be looking at in the small area plans. For sure. But this phase one is really kind of to concentrate on the Shem Creek overlay, implementing that small area plan, and then getting a kick on the Boulevard Overlay District, which would cover all the corridor.
But I guess maybe to Mr. Chapman's question, are you asking about the timeline for implementation of the comprehensive plan long, like, because we have, you know, it's a 10-year plan, so we're taking steps towards achieving that plan. And I guess, was your question directed towards, like, how long will it take to get there?
No, my question was, if you do the special area plans for each individual hub along the road, just to give you an example, let's say we're doing the plan for Town Center. We're doing that. Once you finish that special area plan, where does the overlay district fit? It seems like you don't need it. And so my question is there a staging, if you will, starting, say, at where we are now? And once you do that special area plan, do you pull that out of the overlay district and make that plan supersede anything else, because that's what we said we would do with the special area plan? And then you move down the line, you say get to the Bowman Road area, hospital district, you do that plan, you pull it out, same thing then for Town Center. And I don't, maybe I'm simplifying it too much, but it seems to me that we've got a comprehensive plan and we've got a way to implement that specifically mm-hmm. for these hubs themselves. And so once you do that plan, it seems like it no longer needs to have an overlay on it, mm-hmm. because you've concentrated the planning on what mm-hmm. you think needs to go there. And you don't want that to be negated by an overlay district.
No, but it is part of the phase.
And do you understand?
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
I understand.
Yeah, and it makes perfect sense, Mr. Chapman. And I guess what Liz was saying was that Jeff had, this had been talked about in the past, about what may occur is, the zoning code rewrite is a huge task.
It is.
And it's broken up. And we have the new comp plan, which recommends small area plans. And so I think that what we're thinking along the lines of the same thing that you're saying is, those things would occur sort of simultaneously. So say we look at the Houston Northcutt area. As we look at that zoning and we look at what's recommended in the comp plan, what the zoning could essentially equivalent to a small area plan for that redevelopment area.
Right.
And so you're right. We're going to continue, but the whole thing really is just going to be phased, and more of that is going to come after phase one. Phase one, like I said, consists of sort of a tracking of everything we're updating, and it's going to be the Shim Creek and then the Boulevard Overlay, getting started on the Boulevard Overlay. But you're right, and I understand exactly what you're saying, is that those small area plans are going to be, a lot of this is going to be done simultaneously mm-hmm. as we go through the process. And so, and once we start digging into the code, to the zoning code and what's recommended, and we dig, you know, things are obviously gonna morph, but yeah, you're absolutely right. And that's sort of the plan. And I know that, I understand that Jeff had sort of presented the two working through the process at the same time.
Okay.
But yeah, that's still the plan for us. We're just kind of trying to come up with some quick fixes on things that we know are gonna take a lot of time and a lot of effort and a lot of public outreach.
Yeah, and I'm happy with that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But, right.
Well, we've got to clarify expectations. It's really important here mm-hmm. because I'm not sure. I sense speed from council, and I'm sitting here thinking this is like deconstructing one battleship and building another.
I know.
I mean, these are massive undertakings.
Yeah.
Literally, a lot of these overlays have been built incrementally over years and years and years. And to get into them and unwind them, some of the things that I know what you want are good. But when Michelle mentions quick fixes, that's more like it. We may have to say, hey, these are the things that we think are most important to you. You got to handle those right now. And we'll go back and clean others up as we get to them. So I don't envision it's possible to be going through a complete rewrite of the zoning code, which is way overdue, probably a decade or so overdue. And then the construction of special area plans that you know what will require. It'll require massive public involvement, disagreement, trips to the multiple trips to the Planning Commission for just one special area plan. That's what's going to happen. Lines of speakers. I mean, it is a massive undertaking. So we're concerned about areas like here, Houston Northcutt, where there's development pressure, and some others. And the allowable units are typically more, I think they're more than what council plans for in the comp plan. So perhaps we go back and look surgically mm-hmm. at the zoning in some of these areas, rather than taking the time it's going to take to do special area plans for all these locations around town. I can't imagine we'll get to them all.
Yeah, I agree. I think that prioritizing and, you know, doing these quick fixes that we can do now while the folks take a deeper look at things and to try and do this in like a measured way. I think, you know, it's like a giant ship. You've got to shift it slowly. You can't mm-hmm. just, you know, you can't just turn the wheel all the way. So I think that this is what Ms. Reed has presented is a good first step. And I think that just it's good for staff to understand that council is concerned about, you know, about making sure that we implement the comprehensive plan, but understanding that it's going to take time to do it in phases and maybe choose to tackle one special area plan at a time over time yeah. is probably the more measured way to do it. And but prioritize those, you know, because I mean, for example, like Town Center, I don't think is going to be something that's going to be redeveloped in the next 5 years, right? So that's something that can wait a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
I think we just made it have no residential. Did we remove that? Did we remove Town Center as a hub?
Center.
Oh, we removed it. Okay, sorry.
It wasn't one, but we...
Sorry, I was just referencing. But okay, do we have any further discussion on item number 7? No? All right. Last item on the agenda is adjournment. We stand adjourned.
Thank you.
Thank you.